All right, so I have two goals against tonight. The first goal is I want to discuss one more point about Binyamin relating to Kislev. As last week's discussion was Binyamin and Kislev, I have one more point to share about Binyamin. And then I have a beautiful piece about Chanukah I want to do together to get us ready for the Antif. So those are our two goals for the night. So first we'll discuss Binyamin's connection to Kislev. Last week we discussed how the month of Kislev is connected to Binyamin. Last week we discussed Binyamin's unique role as kind of a person of perfection, of purity, never sinned in his life, never involved with evil in any way, and that's the message of Chanukah, is to dig down in ourselves and find that pure part of our neshama and build from there. There's another part about Binyamin which I discovered in the Nitziv, in the Hamik Dover, in his Pirush on the Chumash. I didn't copy this one, but I'll share it with you. In the Vazos HaBracha, when Moshe Rabbeinu gives the brachos to all the Shvatim, so the bracha of Binyamin is discussed in contrast to the bracha of Yehuda. And the way that Nitziv describes it is that in the bracha of Binyamin, he explains that Binyamin lives above nature. He's someone who lives with incredible bitachon and Hashem. He lives his life not using the rules of everyday cause and effect, but kind of beyond that. He lives totally with Hashem. The Shevet of Yehuda, his bracha is Yadav Rav Lo, that his hands will be very, very mighty. He'll be able to fight wars. And Yehuda is a Shevet, which is able to live within nature and be very, very powerful within nature. So what I mean is the following. The two Shvatim you have in Klal Yisrael that produce kings are Binyamin and Yehuda. Binyamin produced Shaul and Ishbosheth, and Yehuda produced the rest of the kings. Those are the two Shvatim we had that had kings in Sefer Melachim and Sefer Shmuel. The true Machlus of Klal Yisrael is Yehuda. Yehuda, the king is meant to guide us politically, financially. It was a government. And the king has to work within Teva, within nature, and make sure the nation is functioning properly. That's the king's role. The Shaul HaMelech was of Binyamin, and you don't find necessarily in Chumash, in the Navi, this king, that his government was so different. But technically, Binyamin's way of living was very different than Yehuda's, because Binyamin lived above nature. Binyamin, it says, Yishkol Navetach Allah, we saw this last week, that he will dwell in confidence for eternity. He doesn't need to fight wars, Binyamin. Binyamin's able to sit there and trust in Hashem and be able to succeed. Yehuda has to fight wars. So Yehuda is the king that lives al derech ha-teva, he has to live within nature, and Binyamin's living above nature. So in a longer description, the Nitziv quotes a medrash. And this medrash talks about Kriyas Yamsuf. And we're very used to the story that Nachshon ben Amidonov is the first one to jump in. That's the story we're used to. But there's other versions of it as well. That's not the only version out there. And this medrash has a different version of the story. So we're all taught that, you know, the first person, everyone was scared to jump in, and Nachshon decided, I'm going to jump in. He jumps in first, and the sea splits. But this medrash actually says that Shev Binyamin went in first. So it's a different account. The Machlokas of the Midrashim, what happened over there. And the way the medrash describes it, it's very interesting. It says that when Klal Yisrael was standing at the Yamsuf, so Yehuda said, I'm going to go in first. And Binyamin said, I'm going to go in first. And Binyamin just jumped in ahead of Yehuda. That's what this medrash says. And then it says that the leaders of Yehuda were throwing stones at Binyamin. Why did you jump in before us? And based on a pasuk in Tehillim, it says, Sham Binyamin Sa'ir Rodam. And it says you can learn Rodam as Raid Yam. He went into the ocean. So Binyamin went into the ocean, and the Sar Yehuda Ragamasam, the people of Yehuda, stoned Binyamin. So there was some clash of Binyamin and Yehuda at the Yam Suf, that Binyamin wanted to jump in first, and Yehuda came after. That's the way this Medrash describes it. So the Medrash gives a mashal. The mashal was that there was a king who was sleeping. He was going to sleep. And he had two sons. He told one son, wake me at the crack of dawn. He told the second son, wake me in the third hour of the day. So he gave the sons different instructions. So the crack of dawn hits, and the younger son, who was told to wake him at the crack of dawn, says, okay, I'm going to wake him up. And he goes and wakes up the king. So the older son, who was told to wake him at the third hour, said to him, what do you mean? Our father said to wake him up at the third hour. Why are you waking him up so early? So the king was up, and he saw these two sons were arguing. And the king said, both of you desire to fulfill my word. I'm going to reward both of you. So too, Shevet Yehuda received the Malchus. They're the ones who had the dynasty of Klal Yisrael for all generations. And Binyamin received the Beis HaMikdash. We discussed last week, the Beis HaMikdash was in Binyamin's portion. So Binyamin woke up the king first. He jumped in the Yamsu first as the Mashal here, and he gets the Beis HaMikdash. Yehuda wanted to do the right thing, but he didn't do it right away. He was waiting for the third hour, it says in the Mashal, meaning he was waiting to jump into the Yom Suf. He felt the time wasn't quite right yet, and he gets the Malchus. So the question is, what's happening here? It's an interesting account, and it's a funny Mashal, but like, what exactly is the message over here? Because they're both right, it says. The king said, you both want to do my bidding. So then, like, how are they both right? Either you should jump in or you shouldn't jump in. You should wake him up or you shouldn't wake him up. Which one is it? So Nitziv describes an interesting thing. He says, these two, like we said before, these two Shvatim lived in two different styles. One style is to live totally within the world of Teva, but recognize that Hashem controls it all. So Yehuda was the Shevet. They understood that we don't want to bring out open miracles. We live life based on the rules of nature and science and physics and cause and effect, but we recognize that all comes from Hashem. So Shevet Yehuda was the perfect Shevet to be the Melech, because the Melech is the one who's supposed to lead us in a natural way. He fights wars, he runs an economy, he has to employ garbage collectors, he has to do everything which is a normal society uses. But being that it was Klal Yisrael, we understood it's all coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That everything we do, we win a war, it's not the soldiers, it's Hashem. That's the way that Shevet Yehuda functioned. But Shevet Binyamin understood that no, there's a way that we can display Hashem's greatness and might above Teva, supernatural way, through Nisim, through incredible Nisim. And Binyamin lived their life that they're going to totally trust in Hashem, they're not going to do too much in the world of science, not going to do too much in fighting wars, and trust Hashem will take care of it all. Two different ways to live life. The mashal here is that you're standing at the Yam Suf. So we know in the Chumash it describes, at the Yam Suf, the wind started blowing, and there were natural things happening in the air at the time. It goes to the point, which I always find fascinating, you find out there, you can search it online, but you find out there's people who try to describe how could it be that the sea could split naturally. And it's funny, because they're trying to deny God, but they're admitting to the fact there's Kriyas Yam Suf, which is strange why you would do that. And then it was like the right place at the right time, because like the Jews were all standing there at the time, it just kind of happened to happen, the one time history naturally split was at that moment, so it's still God anyways, they can't avoid God doing that. But people have to try to describe it in a natural way. And the truth is, the Chumash does give, you know, talks about the wind blowing, and you know, and science, people will say, you know, if the wind's blowing in the right direction, and the moisture in the air is this, and the gravity is like this, and the moon's over here, like maybe the sea could split, you know. And I guess it's possible, you know. I don't know. But Shevet Yehuda was going to wait it out and say, we want to see the sea split naturally, because we want the world to see that Hashem controls things within the laws of nature. So right place in the right time, the sea happens to split naturally is a pretty incredible thing too, you know, like. The one time in history that the entire nation is standing there being chased by the Mitzrayim, the sea happens to split, so they can run across. Like, that's a pretty incredible thing as well. So Yehuda purposely was waiting. They didn't want to jump in quite yet. But Binyamin says, no, we want to show that Hashem works above nature. Forget the wind. We want the sea just to split because we jumped in, not because the wind's blowing, not because there's the proper like, currents in the ocean at the time. We want the sea to split because Hashem is above it all. So Binyamin jumps in on the spot. They woke up the king at the crack of dawn, where Yehuda's waiting for the third hour, exactly as the mashal says. So Binyamin was the Shevet, and they're the one, according to this message, they jumped in first, because they were trying to display Hashem as above nature. Yehuda's job was to display that Hashem controls things within nature, and Binyamin was trying to show that Hashem controls everything above nature. That was Binyamin's role. So based on that, we can understand, I think, a little bit more how Binyamin relates to Hanukkah. We discussed at length how Hanukkah is the battle of Yavon versus Klal Yisrael. The role of nature versus things that are supernatural. The role of Torah versus the role of science. And Binyamin is, on Hanukkah time, again, we always appreciate science, but Hanukkah time is for us to show that the world functions on a higher plane. That's what Hanukkah is all about. So Binyamin's role as a Shevet, they lived life showing the world functions in a higher plane. It's not just about actions we do within nature. The world functions with things above nature. Yehuda, their job, and it's also an important role, Yehuda has a very important role in Klal Yisrael. Yehuda's job was to show that within nature, Hashem controls it all. So Yehuda could be the Melech, he can run a government, he can run a country, and then they could say, but it's all Hashem. David Melech was extremely humble, he was from Yehuda, and David always said, it's not because of me, it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was his role. So he was a great leader, and he had a great military, he had a very powerful economy, and he built up his land, but he said, it's all Hashem, it's not mine. Binyamin, the role of Binyamin was on a different plane. Binyamin controlled the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, things did not function based on science and nature. There were 10 constant miracles. You have the nace that the Aron didn't take up any space, Chazal tell us. You know, you put it in there and it's not taking up space. We can't imagine such things. You have the kinds of people would stand there like a sardine can packed in, they'd bow down, there's plenty of space around them. You had the pillar of smoke that constantly went straight up, even when the wind blew, it would not move. And there are constant miracles there all day long. Because Beis Hamikdash is a place that shows that Hashem is above it all. Whereas Yehuda was the Melech, because his job was to show that Hashem is in control of things within nature. That was Yehuda's role. Yehuda's method of crossing the Yam Suf would have been, let's wait it out, let's let the wind blow, let's let Hashem do it naturally. So that leaves room for people to deny Hashem and say, you know what, it was a coincidence. It happened to split at the right time. So people can look at science and see things that are incredible. You can see things in science that are wonders, and they can say, you know what, it just happened that way. You know, there was a Big Bang, and then there was evolution, and then things just kind of happened, and, you know, it's a one in like a trillion chance the world could be like this, but it worked out that way. And that's what atheistic scientists do say. And Yehuda's method, even though it's very important, leaves room for somebody to deny. Whereas Binyamin's method, to show things that are above nature, leaves no room for anyone to deny. So Chanukah, our job is to show that Hashem is above it all. And the world functions not just within nature, but on things that are far beyond nature. The you know, in Chanukah, there was two miracles that we recognize. There's the miracle of the fact that a tiny Klai Yisrael, it was able to defeat a world power of the Greek army, and we were able to win a war miraculously. And then there's the miracle of the candles burning for 8 days. So the candles burning for 8 days, that was supernatural. Science can't explain that one. A little Jewish army beating a huge empire, it's unlikely, but it's possible. You know, people can look at that and say, they were very lucky, they were trained really well, they had good techniques. You can come up with explanations within Teva, within nature, why that could work. But to explain how one little jar of oil could burn for so long, that's not scientific anymore. That's something which is supernatural. So Chanukah involves both these kinds of miracles. The Ramban has a famous line, and the Ramban says, this is the end of Parshas Bo, the Ramban says, "Min nisim han niglim anumodim lisim mistarim." From seeing open miracles, you then recognize hidden miracles. So the fact we won the war was a hidden miracle, because you don't see anything supernatural about it. It was just like, you know, a big army, small army, and we won. So how do you know it's from Hashem? Well, you look at the candles burning for 8 days in the Beis Hamikdash, and you say, wow, Hashem is above nature, Hashem controls it all. From seeing open miracles, at that point you learn how to recognize hidden miracles. And that's what, in life we have to live by that principle. Hashem doesn't show us open miracles very often. We see them, you know, on occasion, once in a lifetime, once in a generation, maybe you see an open miracle. But hidden miracles are around us constantly. But we have to learn how to recognize the hidden miracles. So from the fact that we see open miracles in life, at that point we know Hashem is there and Hashem is with us, and then we can see even the small things in life that are miraculous to us are also from Hashem, even though they seem to be hidden miracles. They're working within nature, that's from Hashem as well. So the connection of Binyamin to Chanukah, to Kislev, goes even further. It's not just this point that Binyamin was perfection, was pure, but it's also the point that Binyamin's role as a Shevet was to live above nature. That was their role. They were able to go above Teva, they just sat there and trusted in Hashem, and they merited the Beis Hamikdash in their portion because Beis Hamikdash is a whole building and a whole facility that functions above nature. And that was another role of Binyamin. So that's the last connection of Binyamin to Kislev, at least that I can find. Let me pass out these sheets. This is a beautiful piece of Chanukah, one of my favorite ideas about Chanukah, which I find very inspiring. I wanted to share with everybody. This is a piece from Sichos Musar from Chaim Shmulevitz, the Zatzal, Rosh Yiva of the Mir. And it's actually, this is a newer edition of the Sefer. It wasn't in the older edition, this piece, but it's in the newer edition. And he talks about the miracles of Chanukah, and it's a new perspective on the entire Yom Tif. So it's a long piece, but it's very interesting, and we'll try to get through what we can. So he begins here. My Chanukah. He's quoting from the Gemara. The Gemara says, what happened in Chanukah? What is Chanukah? The Tanur Rabbanin, Shekashnechsu Yavanim Lehechal, Timuko Hashemanim. It says, when the Greeks entered into the Beis Hamikdash, they defiled all the oils, Shebehechal, they were inside the temple. Keshegavra Machus Beis Chashmonoi Venitzchum, when the Chashmonoim were able to overpower the Greeks and win the war, Badku V'lomatzu El Pach Echad Shel Shemen, Shehay Munach V'chosama Shel Kohen Gadol, they found that one jug of oil that had the seal of the Kohen Gadol on it. It was only enough to light for one day. So a nes happened, and they could light for 8 days from that one jug of oil. So the following year, Oshanacheres Kavum Nasom Yomim Tovim Halav Hoda. So the following year, Chazal declared a Yomtif, and they made it a Yomtif of Halav and Hoda, a day to give praise and thanks to Hashem. So that's the quote from the Gemara. Umashma mi Braisa Zu Sheba Halav Vehoda Nikvu Mishum Nespach Shemin. So from the words of what we just read, it seems that the praise we give Hashem on Chanukah is because of the jar of oil. That's how the Gemara words it. The Gemara says that they found this jar of oil and they lit it for one day. It seems like the victory against the Greeks was kind of like a side point. And the main crux of the Yom Tov is to give praise to Hashem on the fact that this oil burned for 8 days. So the question is why? We have to think about this. We fought a terrible war. We were in danger of being totally annihilated. Klai Yisrael was at very high risk at that point. The Kamosh was Kirin Val Nisim. In Al Nisim, we point out the victory in the war. Kishamda Malchus Yavan Harshal Amcha Yisrael Ashkicham Torasecha. It says that the Greeks rose up against us, and they attempted to make us forget the Torah, and bring us away from Hashem's laws. V'nasul Nisim Gedolim. And great miracles happened. Like it says, Masarcha Giborim Bad Chalashim, the mighty fell into the hands of the weak. Rab Yamiatim, the many into the hands of the few. And to you, Hashem, you made your name great and holy in the world because of such an incredible miracle you won the war. And for Klal Yisrael, you did an incredible salvation as of this day. So in Al Nisim, we point out the incredible miracles of the war they fought against the Greeks. A tiny, tiny army overcame a world power. It was an incredible miracle. And the army was a weak army. We're saying a weak army and a small army, they overcame the world power. So it seems that the holiday of Chanukah should have been established because of the victory against the Greeks. Can you really compare the fact that oil burned for 8 days to this victory, which gave us life, saved us? I mean, it's a pretty incredible thing that the oil burned for 8 days. But in the scheme of things, it was pretty insignificant. And if it didn't, we'd still be okay. I mean, the fact that they couldn't light the menorah in the Mitzvah Mikdash, I mean, unfortunately, we've had thousands of years since we had the menorah in the Mitzvah Mikdash, and you know, we're still here. It was very special that Hashem gave us the opportunity to burn that oil for 8 days straight. But that seems to pale in comparison to the victory against the Greeks. I mean, to put it in perspective for a second, It's like picturing that the army of, you know, Micronesia would overpower the army of America. Like, you know, you can't imagine if they have an army. But you take a tiny, tiny country with a weak army and pit them against, like, America or Russia or something and expect they're going to win. I mean, it would be incredible if they did. I mean, we saw Nissan like this a little bit when you had the Israelis fighting against all the Arab nations in like 67 or something. You know, that was also like a small army against many, many armies, but they're a pretty powerful army too. But this is even more. I mean, the Hashmonaim were not trained warriors. They did not have, you know, too much going for them besides that they were tzaddikim and Hashem was protecting them. That's what they had going for them. The Greek army was the most powerful army in the world. We're coming off of the conquest of Alexander the Great. This is a time where I'm sure they're very heavily armed. And, you know, very powerful. So why is Chanukah established for the miracle of the oil, not for the miracle of winning that war? That's the big question. So this is actually relevant to our parsha this week, Vayeshev. And he's going to bring one example from Vayeshev and other examples as well to help us understand this point. Kishahur Yosef Mitzrayimah. When Yosef is brought down to Mitzrayim, Nemar says in the Pasuk, it's this week's parsha, Hine Orchas Yishme'elim Ba Migilad, Ugmalehem nosim nechos utzri v'lot hochim lahorid Mitzrayimah. So we're describing that Yosef was just sold by his brothers. He's being taken down to Mitzrayim, and it says that he was taken by an Arab caravan down to Egypt. It had come from Gilad, and its camels were carrying all sorts of perfumes and spices with it. That's how the Torah describes this caravan. So Chazal tells us, Rashi points it out, Halo ein darkam shel arvayim lios tonin el oros vitron. A typical Arab caravan in those days would not carry spices and perfumes. Usually the caravans carried hides, and itron is like, I think it's like kerosene or something, you know, things that would be very, very, would not smell very appealing. You know, things that had a stench. But Yosef was lucky enough to be brought into a caravan that was carrying perfume and spices. So the Medrash tells us, look what Hashem did for Yosef. It was a miracle. He was put into an Arab caravan, locked up in one of the cars, I guess. But he was locked up with spices that smelled delicious, with a beautiful aroma. The wind was blowing against them, and he had a very pleasant smell as he was brought down to Egypt. And then that was able to overpower the smell of the Arab caravan people. They were taking him down. But that's how the scribes. So there's a miracle occurred to Yosef that as he was sold to Mitzrayim, he got put into a nice smelling caravan. Seems to be a pretty insignificant miracle, not so relevant. And he describes it even more. We don't understand this. Yosef is going through an extremely difficult time right now. You mean, picture him. He, you know, a day before was his father's favorite son. He was part of Klal Yisrael. He had his dreams. He was going to be the leader. He was going to be on top. He had his special coat. He was feeling great about himself. And suddenly, in one day, he fell from the highest levels down into the dumps. His brothers almost killed him, threw him into a pit, and sold him to be a slave in Egypt. We can't imagine something much worse than that. Ben Zakudim Shal Yaakovinu, Yaakov's favorite child, Hamotzerlo Kol Mashalom Mishemir. Yaakov taught Yosef all of his Torah he learned from Shem and Aver, and he was tossed the Bira Mikta into a deep pit, Vios Nimgar Levet Mitzrayim, to be sold as a slave to Mitzrayim. Mokom Memtesh Shur Tumah, place of Tumah, place of filth, lack of spirituality. Eretz Sogeras Mesogeras Asher Ein Eved Yochel Livroch Misham. And it's a place that Chazal tell us slaves could not escape from. Once you went in there as a slave, you were stuck there forever. V'lo Nira She'ipam Yuchal Yishtachrer. So in Yosef's mind, his life is over. He's cut off from the rest of Klal Yisrael, cut off from his father, he's going to be sold as a slave for the rest of his life. We can imagine he's going through a very difficult time in his mind, his emotions. I'm skipping the parentheses here. B'shas choshech ve'afelozu, this time of darkness, my hevdol yesh to Yosef, im yariach riach itra v'neif, the riach shepesom. Do you think Yosef cared how it smelled at the time? Was that on his mind? Like, oh, it smells nice in here. Like, that wasn't what Yosef was thinking at the time. Yosef was sitting there probably broken down in tears and depressed about the rest of his life. And yet, Hashem made this miracle that he got to have a nice aroma inside the caravan. Would the smell of spices at that moment, would it help him at all? Would that calm him down? It's astonishing. Like, what's the point of this? Why would Hashem go out of his way, as it were, to bring this caravan? Like, Yosef probably wasn't even noticing the smell. Like, what was he doing? So he says here in a very incredible yesod, something that's so important for us to take into heart in life in general, to understand the story of Chanukah and Yosef and everything else. He says, "Ach keshenamik b'davar nira, shedavar gadol hu reach v'samim zeh." So if you think about it, the smell of these spices is an incredible thing. The mashmal shona lo lagamri, and it has a whole different implication than we thought. Ki b'shas choshech v'afelozu, because really at this moment of darkness and depression that Yosef was going through, when his whole world was destroyed, Yosef was very likely to come to despair, to give it all up and say, forget about it, you know, my life is over, forget being a Jew, I'm just going to go and do my best to be an Egyptian. And Yosef thought, Hashem is hidden from me. Where is Hashem? You know, I was promised to be part of the Shivtei Ka, and where is Hashem? Hashem's not caring for me anymore. Harehu avud v'nishkach. And Yosef, in his mind, is totally lost and forgotten. Chas v'shom. B'shach kashazu, but at this moment, near Muslim in Hashemayim, Hashem sent him a message. And Hashem said, in a davar ken, it's not true, Yosef. Hashem imo. Hashem is with you. V'dayin hu tachas hashkachosu yisbarach. And I'm still caring for you, Hashem says. Yosef, you're still under my hashkacha. Do not lose your bitachon, Yosef. Reckon I'm still with you. So it was a little miracle, in many ways unnecessary and unimportant, but it was a message to Yosef that I'm with you. And even when things are going bad, and you should be down and depressed, and your life seems to be over, don't worry, it's all coming from me, and I'm still with you and caring for you at this moment, Hashem says. And then he says, El Adarav, because Baruch Hu Malicho Yad V'Yad, Hashem is leading him hand by hand. Hashem is going down with him to Mitzrayim. Kederach she'amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu liYaakov, Anochi Eired Imcha Mitzrayim, Anochi Alcha Gam Alok. Hashem told Yaakov, I'm going with you to Mitzrayim, and I'll bring you up as well. Reach b'samim zeh rehu, Karen ora b'choshech shebohu nasim. So he says a beautiful thing. that the smell of these spices was a ray of light in Yosef's darkness that he was in. So Yosef was given hope through this smell. So Yosef understood that Hashem was doing this for him. Yosef understood that typically these caravans did not smell nice. He understood Hashem did him a favor. And he knows that even at this moment, Hashem is still with him, despite it all. He's able to go back and to rise up above his lowly situation. Like Yonah says, Yonah thought that I've been totally cast away. But look, now I can still look back at Hashem's Heichal. And Rashi explains, now that I've seen that you have preserved me all these days, I know that I will once again be able to look back towards your Beis Hamikdash. That's what Yonah says. So Yosef at this point could have given up all hope, but Hashem gave him this very special miracle to show him that don't give it up, Yosef. I'm with you. It's going to be a long, hard journey, but I'm not going to let go of you for 1 second. So this miracle which happened to Yosef, it wasn't just about the smell. It wasn't that Hashem felt bad, he should smell something bad, Hashem gave him a nice smell. That wasn't the point. It wasn't just to have some potpourri in the room. El kedil hayar panim a love. It was that Hashem was shining his face at Yosef. Yosef should understand that even at this moment, you are not forgotten, you are not abandoned, you are not lost. Chas v'shalom. Oh, Hashem is with you and He loves you. Umazmin lo reach shel basam. And Hashem gave him the smell of spices. V'lamen mizeh shekol ha'yisurim v'ayim lo. And Yosef learned from this that everything that will occur in the next 20 years when he's in Mitzrayim, everything that's going to happen to him, mitoch avas Hashem. It's all from avas Hashem. As long as Hashem loves him. And it's all part of the plan. That's what Yosef understood. So you see this tiny little miracle, which seems so insignificant, but for Yosef, it was life and death. For Yosef, it was about, am I rejected, or am I cared for by Hashem? And it made all the difference to him. You know, in life, he'll explain more examples, but in life sometimes we have small miracles happen. You know those books, Small Miracles, if you see those books. You know, but small miracles happen in life. Don't sweat the small stuff. But there's small miracles. You know, in our life, often things happen to us. You know, we call them at the right place in the right time, or somebody said the right thing to me at the right time, or things happen to us. And sometimes they're not so significant. It's not like a life or death thing. It's not something that had to happen to me. But you say, you know, Hashem was with me in this one. You know, I felt Hashem's presence. I felt Hashem taking care of me. And you can look at that as Hashem is there to give us a little bit of chizuk, to encourage us. He compares it later on to like a kiss from Hashem. Hashem is there to say, I love you. I'm here for you. You can compare it to like a, you know, somebody brings you a bouquet of flowers. So it's not going to change your life, and it's not life or death, and it's a sweet thing, but it shows I care about you. Hashem does miracles at times just to say to a person, I care about you.
And we have the something also after Shabbos, you know, when you smoke the something, so you shouldn't be sad that Shabbos is leaving. You know, you
think that's a connection.
Smell something makes you feel better.
And we feel that throughout the week, Hashem will still be with me through the week also. Yeah. That's a nice thought. That's a good connection. I always like to tell the story, along with this piece, that I had a friend years ago, when I first came to Yeshiva here. This is about 15 years ago or so, more, 16 years ago, long time ago. And I had a friend who from Atlanta who was here for a year on internship. He was married already with kids, he's older than me. I was here as a bachur in Yeshiva. And we used to learn together at nights. So my friend had learned in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael probably like, I don't know, 8 years before or something. And when he was in Eretz Yisrael, he had with him a 6-volume set of Shas. And he lost one in Eretz Yisrael. And when he left Eretz Yisrael, he only had 5 volumes. So one day, this is probably, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years later, the two of us are learning together in the Beis Medrash in the Yeshiva here in Silver Spring. And someone comes over and says, oh, I have your sefer for you. He looks at it, he's like, how do you have the sefer? This is the volume I was missing from Eretz Yisrael like 6 years ago. And this person had been from Eretz Yisrael back to America, to Atlanta, and happened to be in Silver Spring for a year-long internship. And somehow that sefer traveled overseas and met him here in Silver Spring, in the Beis Medrash here in the Yeshiva. Again, this is like 6, 7 years after he left Eretz Yisrael. So he was astounded. Like, and he put it back in his, it was one he was missing from his set. It has his name inside, you know? It was amazing. So he decided he wanted to tell the story to Rosh Yeshiva, to Rabbi Lopiansky. See what he said about the story. You know, it was a pretty incredible thing. So he told Rabbi Lopiansky the story. And he said to him, this piece here, as long as Hashem will give you a kiss, Hashem will give you a small miracle, which, you know, he could have lived without the volume of Shas. I'm sure he had other Gemaras at that time, you know, by that point. But as long as Hashem wants to give you a kiss, and this is how I'm thinking about you, you know, that's what he told my friend. And I think about that a lot, because it's certainly a miracle. How would that be, that Sefer traveled across the ocean and got to the same place that he was years later? I mean, it's you know, it doesn't make sense. But it did somehow. And sometimes Hashem does these little things for us that, you know, they're not necessary and they're not so important and they're minor, but they're to show us that Hashem cares for us and loves us. So he brings us some more examples here. Next example, he says, "Hinei matzino kama nisim shenasu l'choro l'tzorch dvarim shenir pu'utim." We find throughout Chumash and throughout Tanakh that many miracles are done that seem to be very minor. "Kamod ha'neshim sinu etzel David v'Goliath." There's nis we find with David and Goliath. So David's fighting against Goliath. David shoots a slingshot at him. It says, "V'yachas ha'plishti el mitzcho." It says in the pasuk that David's stone, the shot at Goliath with a slingshot, hit him in the forehead. "V'titba evan mitzcho," and the stone sunk into his forehead and killed him. "V'ipapan v'atzer," and he fell on the ground on his face. So Chazal point out over here, "Lohelu lipol l'chorov." If you hit somebody in the head with a stone, so the impact should push them backwards. But Goliath fell forwards. So Chazal say it was a nace. He should have fallen, based on the laws of physics, would have fallen backwards. But Goliath fell forwards. Why did he fall forwards? "Asharig al mitzchol huka, al kadeshul yitztayar David le'lech lachtochas rosho." But had Goliath fallen backwards, Goliath was a giant. So for David, he'd have to walk around to cut his head off. So a little inconvenient for David. You know, it would take him an extra, I don't know, 20 steps or something. "Shistakar David achshav shtei mesrei amos v'zar sayim." But David now saved walking 12 plus amos. We're talking about like 20 feet, you know? So Hashem saved David 20 feet. So instead of falling backwards, David had to walk all over there. David could just kind of go like that right away and chop his head off. He was already dead anyways. It wasn't like this was the death blow. "Chikamosha goyas shish amos vizeris," etc. So, like, what was the point of that? Like, trying to show, I mean, the death itself. I mean, I think that's clear to people. I mean, you were talking about this, like, mighty giant, this little old David with his slingshot. David didn't even wear armor. He just went out there on his own, took the slingshot, and shot him. So I guess he could say that Hashem was showing this is a miraculous event. But he says even more. He says, "Varam masmiyim, hari amru chazal, kam maguna adam zesh ishtanu b'shvilo sidre b'reishis." So Chazal tell us that Hashem doesn't like, as it were, to do miracles. When Hashem does miracles for a person, it's considered something which is, you know, not ideal. Hey, what he's referring to here is the Gemara says that there was a man who, his wife had passed away and he had a little child. They couldn't afford to hire a wet nurse to nurse the child. So Hashem did a nes, and the man was able to nurse the child himself. So, but the Gemara says that wasn't considered a greatness of this man. It was considered that it was considered kind of a low thing to happen to him. I mean, Hashem didn't give him a job. Instead of Hashem giving him a job to make money to hire the wet nurse, Hashem made this miracle happen and he's able to nurse the kid. But the Gemara says, because Hashem likes working within nature, and doesn't like going beyond nature. And for this man, Hashem deemed it fit that I'm not going to give him a job. He doesn't deserve a job. Rather, I'll do this miracle for him. So that's its own discussion why that is. But it says that Hashem doesn't like to do things that are supernatural. So Hashem to do just these random, unnecessary miracles is strange. It's not a minor thing for Hashem to change nature. If Hashem did something supernatural just to prevent David from a little bit of extra tircha, to have to walk a little more than 12 amos, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, David was a young, strong guy. He could have walked around. It wasn't a major deal at all. The Orachaim also explains this in a different situation. The Orachaim says in the parsha in Lech Lecha, it says, Hashem told Avram Avinu, Hashem tells Avram Avinu, you should lift up your eyes and look from where you are. Look north and south and east and west. The Pirish Orachaim explains, what does that mean? Tam Shehutzrach Lomar Mina Makom Mashrat Hashem. It says, from the place where you are, look around, Hashem tells Abraham. What does it mean, from the place where you are? So, Kanasa Lun Nes, Hashem did a Nes for Abraham. Avram is able to see all four directions without turning his head. So, I don't know, like everything came in front of him or something. I'm not sure how it worked. The eyes in the back of his head. I'm not sure what happened exactly. But Avram was able just to stand still and look straight. And he was able to see all around him. So, it's a pretty interesting nace. It's a pretty cool nace. It's amazing. But again, unnecessary. I mean, nothing was happening at the time. There was no war and there was no need for it. Was it so hard for Avraham just to turn around to do 360 and look around everywhere? Because he had to have such an incredible miracle occur to him. It's a very strange thing. Let's skip the parentheses and go to the next paragraph here. Look at all these small, unnecessary miracles. So he explains, based on what we understood with Yosef, you can understand these as well. But now, based on what we've said about Yosef, we understand a new yisod about Nisim. Sometimes Nisim can occur just so Hashem can give us an aras panim. So Hashem can shine His face in us and make us feel loved, make us feel cared for. We can also understand now the miracles that occur to David and to Avraham Avinu. And let's give a mashal, he says. Let's say that there was a family that lost a beautiful gem. Asher haya Yerushalayim midor dor. That was a family heirloom for generations. This beautiful gem, and it was lost. V'chol b'nei mishpacha nitztaru, and everybody in the family was very distressed. Tzar gadol ma'od, a very big tzar. V'tarchu v'chol kochem l'chapso, and they searched everywhere for this gem, and they couldn't find it. L'achar yegia v'chipus nirchavim nimtza hayalom ade echad yodim. So after a long and extensive search, one of the little kids found the gem. So the father gets up and kisses the kid on the head. The family had an incredible simcha at this moment. And the kid was also very excited for the family. But besides the fact that the kid was involved in the general family simcha, he also had a personal simcha, the fact that his father gave him that kiss. So it means sometimes you're involved in a huge simcha which involves others, your family, Klal Yisrael. But you also look at the individual. So the family was so excited they found this gem, but this kid also, he should be recognized as the kid who found the gem, who actually found it. So the father came over and gave him a big kiss. So the kid was so excited the gem was found, but he also felt super special that his father gave him an individual kiss and gave him that pride for finding the gem. This is what it means, these nisim of Avraham and David are of this nature. Certainly killing Goliath was an incredible event. I mean, if you read the way that it's described in Tanakh, I mean, the Plishtim were really causing us some major problems. Goliath was an extremely scary person. I mean, he was about 20 feet tall. I mean, he was 15 feet tall. He was huge. He was a giant. And he could have crushed us all. And we were terrified of Goliath. And little David comes along and kills him. And it was a simcha for the entire people. The nation was celebrating the fact that Goliath was killed and pushed him fled. There was a huge Kiddush Hashem and a salvation of the entire nation, including David. David's part of Klal Yisrael, so the salvation included David, and he was happy about that. But David also was zochel l'neis miyuchad. David was zochel to a personal miracle as well, when a shika pratis. He was given a kiss by Hashem along with him. So it would have sufficed that David killed Goliath and Klal Yisrael celebrates. But Hashem showed David, I'm not only saving Klal Yisrael, but I also love you for what you did. Your bitachon, your bravery, you're willing to step up and to defend Klal Yisrael. I'm going to give you a special, unique kiss for yourself, just to show you that I'm caring about you at this moment of a national simcha.
And he knew that.
And David understood this, yeah. We're assuming David understood this, just like Yosef understood the spices in the caravan as well. Okay. Right. These were smart people, so hopefully they picked up on it. So this is the nace that Goliath fell forwards, which had no significance on its own, right? It's all just Hashem shining His face on David in particular, besides the general nace done to all Klal Yisrael. And the truth is, the smaller the need for the miracle, the love shown to David was even greater. Because if Hashem even comes in and does something very tiny for you, you know that there's no need for it at all. It's just because Hashem wants to help me out. That's what we see. And the same thing with Avraham Avinu. V'kinyan hazeh hu nesu nasa l'Avram. She'yira sa'aretz kula b'riya achas b'lo she'yitzdarach l'sov v'panav. Avram could see the whole land without having to turn his head. Haftacha zu she'zacha bo m'lose'ez ki kol artzer atzeroe l'cha enena l'zarach ar olam. At that moment, Hashem promised Avraham Avinu all of Eretz Yisrael. And he told him, this is going to be for you and your descendants forever. V'samdi zarach ha'kafa aretz, I'm going to make your descendants like the dust of the earth. Kum yishalech ba'aretz l'orch l'rachbos. Hashem tells Avraham Avinu, you can walk the land, its length and its width, because it's all for you. So Hashem was making promises to Avraham, but these were promises to a nation. That Avraham, you're going to be the father of these descendants who are going to be Klal Yisrael. So this is a moment of national achievement, a moment of national joy. So Avraham might have thought, okay, it's all about what I'm going to produce, but it's not about me. It's about my children, not about me. So that moment, the promise was for Klal Yisrael and for Eretz Yisrael. These are big things. The Sherbazen is smile at Tachlis of Bria Kul. The whole Tachlis of the world is fulfilled through Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. But at that moment, Ach v'shaaf tacha zu zach Avraham l'nishika miyuchas. Avraham merited to get a kiss from Hashem, a personal kiss. Shnaslo neis shelo yitzdarech l'sovet panav v'shaaf sh'ras arz. Neis happened, he didn't have to turn his head to see the land. Neis she'inu b'shvil Klal Yisrael. It wasn't for Klal Yisrael. B'shvil Avraham atzma. Hashem said, I'm doing a miracle for you, Avraham. This is not for Klal Yisrael. This is not for your descendants. It's for you personally. Because I want to show you that I love you for who you are, for what you've done. This is a special ha'ara, a special light from Hashem that came to Avraham to show him his love. So those are those examples. He gives more and more examples. I want to get to the part about Hanukkah before we run out of time. So if you want to, where does it go? Let's skip to the very bottom. We'll just skip the next paragraph. Go to the very bottom of that page, page Samech Tes. It begins, V'pima halach zeh, she'pa'amim she'kol tachnei su'gili haras panim. So based on this approach, that sometimes you can have miracles that are purely for Hashem showing His love. An ashika, kiss from Hashem. I mean, we talk about miracles, usually we're talking about these big national salvations, Kriyas Yam Suf, the Makos, we're talking about defeating the armies in Eretz Yisrael, we're talking about all sorts of things like that. Purim, we're talking about overcoming Haman. But we don't usually talk about these miracles that are just nashika, just kisses from Hashem. But Hanukkah is time to focus on that. We can now, he says, we can understand now the chashivas shel neis pach hashemen. What was the significance of the oil burning for 8 days? V'satam l'kach shekviyas shel Chanukah, and we can also understand why Chazal established Chanukah hiel neis zeh, for this miracle. Avshel chora ein lashvoso atzos Klal Yisrael, which is nowhere near as great as saving Klal Yisrael. Kadra b'neis zeh she'inu ala p'chdei she'yizku lad lokas ha'menorah b'tara higyum yuchat shel avas ha'kosh baruch hu. But we see here the following. The nais of the oil burning, again, it was not necessary at all. That was not what we needed to save ourselves. We had to overcome the forces of Yavan. And if we lasted another week without the menorah, we would have been okay. You know, and it's interesting also because different poskim and mefarshim in the halacha discuss at length, like, why couldn't they light the menorah with the tamei oil? There's so many approaches in halacha that would have allowed them to light the menorah anyways. Like, the fact that they found pure oil seems to be totally extra, like it wasn't necessary. We could have done the mitzvah in many, many ways without having that oil. But yet the oil was found and the miracle occurred. So what was the point of that? So it says, this was a special revelation of Hashem's love to His nation. Kol kulo nashika, a kiss from Hashem. Chiba yaseira la'am Yisrael. A special chiba, a special closeness to Klal Yisrael. That's what it was. It's like Hashem sending us a bouquet of flowers. Hashem is saying, I saved you from the Greeks. And that was a necessary miracle. That was needed. But I want to show you that it goes beyond that. I'm not just doing things I have to. I'm doing things I love you. I care about who you are and what you do. And he says even further, Imran anrom biyachas av lebanov. If you look at a parent and a child, she'ikar avasu lehem nikeras besipuk atzrachim she'em luchrachim lehem. Mosros. It's interesting. When you look at a parent to a child, when you're trying to display your love, the love is, I mean, obviously a parent feeds a child dinner because they love them. But if you want to show your love, it's not because I gave you dinner tonight. It's because I do things extra for you. Take you out for a special activity. I get you a special present. I sit down for an extra special game with you. That's when you actually show your love in a much more clear way. Doing necessities, the fact that the kid has pants to wear and has a meal on the table. Parents do it out of love, but it's not a display of love from the kid's perspective. The kid doesn't see the love in that. The kid just says, okay, you have to do that for me because I'm your kid. But when you take them out for a special treat, then they see the love. So when Hashem does extras for us, that's when we feel the love. So let's say Chas V'Shalom is a kid who is on bad terms with the parent. He's not doing the right things. The parents are upset with the kid. Sometimes the parents then will not give them extras. They just take care of their basic needs, but not the extras. Let's say there's a kid who's beloved by his parents. So the parents give the kid all his desires. They try to show the kid anything you want. We're so happy to take care of you, until they spoil the kid. But besides that, they give him anything he wants. Even though from an objective perspective, certainly the needs are much more important than these extras, but what shows the love and the importance of the child in the parents' eyes, between ercho etzlo and how much they appreciate the kid, who dafka ben asinas and moses, that's for giving the extras, the extra special gifts. And the smaller the extra gift is, that shows more and more the love the parents have for the child. So, the fact that we were able to win the war, and that Hashem allowed us to beat this mighty and mighty army, despite the fact that we were weak and small, that was like a necessity. That was life or death. No, Hashem promises us that Klal Yisrael will exist, the Torah will not be forgotten, there's Netzach Yisrael, there's an eternity to Klal Yisrael, the Torah is going to carry on, so Hashem has to take care of that. You know, the issue of the Greeks persecuting and trying to make us assimilate, Hashem has to step in, kevyachol, and take care of that one. That's a need, that's a necessity. That's like a parent providing, like, you know, breakfast for the kid. You have to give your kid food, you have to give your kid clothing, those are necessities. So through winning the war, Klal Yisrael was able to continue and endure, and Hashem was able to carry on with His promise that Torah will never be forgotten. But through that, you don't see the love. You see necessities. You don't see love. But only the miracle of the oil, which was unnecessary, it allows to be zoche, to do a mitzvah properly for a week. Neshu bevechinas musros, a miracle which was essentially an extra gift, a cherry on top, is a special treat. Lumas anisim shenasu latzalasim. In relevance to the anisim needed to win the war, this was this extra special treat. Hu haya aras panam yuchedes zochu laYisrael meitzah kushbach. This was a special love, a special ha'aras panim, he calls it, Hashem showing His face towards us and showing us His care that was given to us. This is a revelation of Hashem's love for Klal Yisrael. So just to put this in perspective, why was that needed at the time? So we've mentioned before how Hanukkah was a time of darkness for Klal Yisrael. Hanukkah is a time where we need a hug. You know, we were going through very difficult times. Many Jews have assimilated historically. We view this as the time of Choshech, as we described in previous weeks. You know, it was a dark, dark time for Klal Yisrael. And when you're in the darkness, that's when you need extra. So Hashem says, okay, I'm going to help you survive, but I'm also going to give you a hug. I'm going to show you that I really care about you, despite the fact things are going so terrible. And then we were in Golus. Things were very, very bitter. Many, many Jews were killed. And even as time went on, you know, the Chashmonaim family, the heroes of Hanukkah, you know, they were tzaddikim. But their family had a tragic end. I mean, the Hanukkah story goes on. People don't realize this. Even after the miracle of the oil happened, the war continued for another 20 years afterwards. The war wasn't over at that point. They'd won the battle to take back the Beis HaMikdash, but there were still battles raging all over Eretz Yisrael for another 20 years. And it was a bloody, difficult war. And afterwards, the Chashmonaim family, they went to a very tragic end. They made a big mistake, the Ramban explains, that they took for themselves the kingship. They were Kohanim. They're supposed to remain Kohanim. They're supposed to give the Malchus to Shevet Yehuda, as we talked about before. And they decided to become Lochin themselves, and their family was doomed. And many of them became themselves, you know, after their grandparents fought against assimilation, made them assimilated. It's very ironic. You know, Matasiah and his sons, they fought battles and gave their lives so the Jews didn't assimilate. And they had great-grandchildren who were kings who were assimilated. As the family went on, you see the names began as Matthias and Yochanan and Shimon and Elazar, and then it turned into Menelaus and Aristobulus and Hyrcanus and Jason. If you go down the generations, and the Hashmonaim family ended up, you know, in a very tragic way. Alexander, Yanai, all of them in a very tragic way. But in that time of history, it was very difficult for Klal Yisrael. Hashem said, okay, I'm going to preserve Klal Yisrael despite everything going on around them. But beyond that, I'm going to show you I still love you. And this is the time we really needed that from Hashem, because we couldn't tell, we couldn't see the love. We couldn't see that Hashem still cares about us, because look at us. You know, things were a wreck. But Hashem said, despite it all, I'm going to give you this miracle as a siman that my love for you remains even in Golus. And it's very interesting that now the Rambam, when he discusses Chanukah, he says that Chanukah is a mitzvah chaviva hi amod. It's an extremely precious mitzvah. Now, very rarely does the Rambam use such flowery speech when describing his halachas. But he says that Chanukah is a very precious mitzvah. And I like to make this connection. It's precious to us because Chanukah is a mitzvah that shows Hashem's love for Klal Yisrael. Chanukah was the final yontif established that we have. You know, we have the holidays that are Deraisa, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. We have Purim, which is part of Gilas Esther. Chanukah was the final yontif established by Chazal before we went into Golus. And Chanukah for us is the message that as difficult as things are, as dark as things are, and as we mentioned many times in the past few weeks, in the cold, dark nights of the winter, when things are cold and dark, and you know things are not don't seem to be going so well, things are not so clear, the menorah is a sign for us that Hashem's love is always there. And Hashem's love is never ceasing and never ending. And that's one of the greatest messages of Chanukah. So the Yontif itself wasn't established for the war, it was established for this. Because the real message for us is not that Hashem will make Klal Yisrael endure, because that we know. We have promises in the Chumash that in the Tanakh that Hashem will never totally forsake Klal Yisrael, we will have an eternity. But the holiday is about to show that even despite when we're doing bad things and Klal Yisrael looks like they're in a bad situation, Hashem's love is always there for us and never stops. That's really the end of Chanukah. Thank you. So much.